Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd, and I'm still sitting on the Meet the Press set. We just wrapped up a big show. We had Dr. Anthony Fauci, the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and Ohio Democrat Senator Sherrod Brown. Here are my quick takeaways from the show today. Look, biggest takeaway number one from Anthony Fauci is please do not somehow think of any of these vaccines as somehow less effective than the other Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It has an efficacy rate of 72% versus what's in the high 80s and low 90s with the other two vaccines. And he couldn't have tried to make it any clearer that he thought all three vaccines are safe, all three vaccines are effective. Obviously, the big deal with Johnson & Johnson is that it is a single shot. But a couple of times now, during the interview, when I sort of push a more optimistic approach or an optimistic view of where things are, Dr. Fauci was clearly very concerned that we are at this plateau point here that could go in either direction. So there seemed to be emphasis more on the word caution than optimism, though the optimism was there too. Senator Sherrod Brown, what was interesting is he would not talk about blowing up the filibuster, not talking about blowing it up for the minimum wage, seemed to hint that there are other ways to deal with the minimum wage, maybe in the bill, but maybe outside of the bill. I think that was an interesting tell. He had to read between the lines, but there was no demands, no definitive anything. The real push was the overall relief bill. And as you can see, certainly Sherrod Brown is on the on that sort of Biden side of things is probably the best way to describe describe that. But I think that an important tell. Had Sherrod Brown been in the let's blow up the Senate mode over this minimum wage, that would have probably been a sign that a larger group of Senate Democrats were ready for that fight. Then finally, Justin Trudeau. I hope you get to watch all of the interview. We had excerpted portions of it on the 1 hour show, but we do a longer interview. We go through a whole bunch of stuff from Canada's own vaccine issues to their views of Saudi Arabia. As well as obviously a lot more on the Keystone Pipeline and, frankly, the future of American foreign policy through the eyes of what you might call the liberal, the small L liberal democracy country. So it's a big show. By the way, data download, really a fascinating tell how Georgia 2020 may be Virginia 2008. See if take a look and see if you agree. And with that, let me turn it over to Carrie Dan with her number of the week.
Hey, thank you so much, Chuck. It is me, Carrie Dan, here from the NBC News Political Unit with your number of the week. I'll start by saying that I've been thinking a lot lately about shamelessness in politics, because it is kind of a weird superpower to be a politician who just simply cannot be shamed. We certainly learned this with President Donald Trump. No matter what you think of him, he never felt the need to apologize or change his behavior in any way, no matter what the story was. Stormy Daniels, the Proud Boys, spending so much time playing golf. Like, no matter what the criticism of him was, or how much evidence there was to support it, he always just shrugged it off, which meant he never apologized for anything. Which for his supporters meant, well, I guess he can do no wrong. More recently, shame was a part of the story for Ted Cruz, who planned a trip to Cancun even as the power grid in his home state was on the verge of collapse. Cruz was shamed into coming back early from the trip, and eventually he said something that wasn't exactly "I'm sorry," but at least acknowledged that the whole thing was a mistake. It still kind of makes you wonder, though, what exactly he thought was going to happen if his constituents found out that he was enjoying a cabana at a Ritz-Carlton in Mexico during a devastating winter storm. All of this brings me to our number of the week, which is 84. 84 is the age of a woman who died earlier this month. You may have seen her obituary. Unless you were paying attention to politics in the 1970s, you might not have heard her name before, but she was at the center of a political scandal that tested the limits of shamelessness in politics. This woman's real name was Annabel Battistella, but if you have heard of her, you've probably heard of her by her stage name, Fanny Fox. Fanny Fox was a stripper. the Argentine firecracker, they called her. She performed at a place in DC called the Silver Slipper, making $500 a week. She would put on these enormous, fancy, feathered costumes and was apparently very, very talented at taking them off. She was also the mistress of one of the most powerful members of Congress, Wilbur Mills of Arkansas, which the world found out about in spectacular fashion because of the events of about 2 a.m. on October 7th, 1974. Here's what happened. That night, park police officers noticed a car driving erratically, with its lights off, near the Jefferson Memorial. And Fanny Fox jumped out of that car, yelling in English and Spanish, and jumped headfirst into the tidal basin. It all sounds very dramatic. She was wearing an evening gown at the time and was very, very drunk. The cops fished her out of the water. One of the other people in the car, however, was Wilbur Mills. He was bleeding, and he was also drunk. Very, very, very drunk. Let's pause and set the scene here for a minute about Wilbur Mills. He was not just any old congressman. He was the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, which is always a position of power, but especially at the time, he was like the guy if you wanted anything in DC politics. He'd briefly run for president. He was a super wonky guy who knew more about the tax system than anybody else in DC. And he'd worked on some of the most important legislation in the country's history. Medicare would not exist without his work. He was also 65 years old. He had 6 grandkids. And he wore these kind of nerdy Coke bottle kind of glasses, which at the time of this police incident had been broken. Now, after all this happened, everyone just kind of went home. No one was charged in all of this, which is kind of amazing. But a journalist got wind of it and started digging. At first, Mills denied ever even having been at the tidal basin at all. Then, after 3 days of silence, he finally admitted that he had actually been there. And just for good measure, he threw his spokesman under the bus for the earlier lie. He said that the woman who was in the car who had jumped into the tidal basin was a family friend, who his wife Polly had insisted that he take out to entertain. Poor Polly was at home with a broken foot. I mean, that's just, I mean, shameless, right? Who on earth would believe that? But the story does not stop there. Oh no, dear listener, there's a lot more. At first, Mills' colleagues in the House mostly gave him a pass. They said, yeah, he should explain himself, but after all, he's really, really good at understanding taxes. And some of them said, I've never even seen the guy take a drink. The Speaker of the House at the time, Tip O'Neill, said, quote, maybe he was just a victim of circumstances. Now, Mills was also up for re-election. He went back home to campaign with his wife Polly in tow, using the line, never drink champagne with foreigners, because the foreigners, I guess, were the problem here. And guess what? He won. He had just lived through this extremely embarrassing episode, but voters didn't really seem to mind. Now, in the meantime, Fannie Fox was doing what someone in every great American scandal does, cashing it in. The publicity had been really good for her. She booked a big burlesque gig in Boston for $3,000 a week. And guess who showed up on closing night? Not only did Wilbur Mills go to her burlesque show, he went on stage at her burlesque show. He had reportedly had 2 bottles of vodka before this, which is probably the only reason that you might think that this was a good idea. Of course, journalists had been tipped off. They saw the whole thing happen. They staked out the exits. Wilbur Mills couldn't get out without being confronted, and he ended up doing a press conference.
How do you feel the American public will react to your attention to Miss Fox?
Well, they should react very well, very favorably. All I'm trying to do is to launch a career.
Don't you think this looks bad for you personally as a married chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, though?
My wife's in on it.
Yeah, you get a sense there of the state that Wilbur Mills was in. He gave these rambling remarks to a different reporter about he had launched the careers of all of these other actresses and that he had started writing movies. And then he said something truly amazing. Asked again, the sort of key question here, is this a bad look for you? He replied this, "This won't ruin me. Nothing can ruin me." Now, this whole burlesque show thing was the final straw for Wilbur Mills' colleagues. They started talking about censuring him, maybe taking away the Ways and Means Committee gavel from him. Finally, Mills went to the hospital and acknowledged what we all know to be true, that he had a severe alcohol problem. He gave up the Ways and Means gavel, but said he wouldn't resign. He got sober and kept serving quietly in Congress for another 2 years. One quick sidebar here. One thing that probably got left on the table when Wilbur Mills left Congress was a project that the old Wilbur Mills, like the one before this sort of big public breakdown, had been working on and thought he was really close to actually being able to get done. That project was a national healthcare plan. Like, literally the entire course of the history of the American healthcare system may have been very different if it weren't for the way that this particular scandal played out. Now, Fannie Fox continued to cash in on her fame. She wrote a book, she did some movies, she posed for Playboy. Late in life, she went back to school, she learned to scuba dive. She was 84 when she died earlier this month. Now, I started all of this by talking about shamelessness. Here's something about Wilbur Mills. He said long after all of this was over that he basically has no memory of the year 1974 at all. As is obvious by this point, he had a super severe alcohol and prescription drug problem. He was blacked out, he said, not just when he was hanging out with Fannie Fox, but also like at the White House at meetings. He learned about all this salacious stuff he did by reading about it in the newspaper. And he said that he didn't really feel shame about it all at the time because it didn't feel real to him. He said he knew it was embarrassing, but he didn't care. If alcohol is a truth serum, Wilbur Mills must have also really thought he was so powerful he was invincible. Nothing, he said, could ruin him, right before it all came crashing down. So, being shameless may be a superpower in American politics, but it sure has its limits. Every politician is different, but the more they push the limits of what they think they can get away with, the more dangerous it gets. So maybe a little shame is good. It's healthy. The pile-on on Ted Cruz with the whole Cancun thing might have ended up being a touch unseemly, but maybe, just maybe, it was a little bit humbling too. And if it wasn't, well, that would be a shame. That's it for us. Stay tuned to the Chuck Todcast all week for more news and analysis. And as always, you can always download us on your favorite podcast app.